Hey y'all, this is Liz at scariestthings.com. Tonight we have a special episode. I am joined by Mallory O'Meara, who is the writer of the upcoming release from Hanover Square Press called The Lady from the Black Lagoon, Hollywood Monsters and the Lost Legacy of Millicent Patrick. Mallory, thank you so much for talking to me tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give our listeners a brief summary of your book and what made you want to write it?
Well, Lady from the Black Lagoon is basically like Julie and Julia for monsters. It is a biography of Millicent Patrick, who designed the creature from the Black Lagoon. She was also one of Disney's first female animators and was this incredible trailblazing artist in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. But thanks to a jealous male colleague when she was working at Universal Studios, who took both her credit and her spotlight, she stopped working behind the scenes in film and never worked behind the scenes in film ever again, and nobody knew what happened to her. She's been my hero for a really long time, and when I was a teenager and I first saw a picture of her working on the creature, it completely changed my life and showed me that there was a place for women in horror, which I had never really thought about before, and led directly to my own career as a filmmaker. And when I was in my mid-20s, I got the idea from a friend of mine to look into her story further, and it turned into this book.
That's awesome. I love that you describe it as the Julie and Julia, or Julia and Julia of the horror world. That's totally it, because it has a lot of autobiographical details woven in with Millicent's biography. So since you describe so many autobiographical things and your process of writing the book within the book, what was your favorite part of the research process?
I think my favorite part, the coolest part, was getting to go to Hearst Castle, just because it's so beautiful, and it really is like being in Wonderland. And I got to go twice. I had to go twice for research for the book, and every time it really is like being transported to a different world, and it's so much fun. And it's one of those moments where every few minutes I would have to be like, wait, I'm here for work. I have to be here. This is my job right now.
That's awesome. What was your favorite thing that you learned about Millicent while doing the research?
My favorite thing I learned about her was how versatile she was. And then, you know, she's famous for Creature from the Black Lagoon, but she did so much more, and it really resonated with me. I think if you want to make it as a creative person, you know, you have to do podcasting, you have to write, you have to, you know, you have to do so many different, wear so many different hats and get good at so many different skills, just thanks to social media and new media and figuring out the internet, that finding out that Millicent was an animator and an illustrator and a fashion designer and a makeup designer, and she was able to take her talent and sort of focus it on so many different areas across her career, that it made me feel great as a multi-hyphenate. Like, oh, wait, people have been doing that for decades. That's how you do this.
Yeah, I love that she was a fashion designer, because all the pictures and everybody who talked about her, she was always dressed to the nines and always loved to be styled up. So that was great. And it seems so fitting with the times of what women wore, but she was just, she always looked like she was going to a fancy dress party, and I love that. I wish I was one of those people. I'm a jeans and t-shirts kind of gal myself.
I hear you. It's not easy to dress up every day.
No, not like that. Not in her black cocktail dress and pearls while she's going to work. Were there any fun facts that you learned that didn't make it into the book?
Everything is in there. The most disappointing part to me is it's not facts that didn't make it into the book. It's pictures. I have so many pictures of her original artwork and photos of her, both professional photos and behind the scenes photos, and just like casual shots of her with friends. And we had to limit the amount of pictures we had in the book, and it was an agonizing process. So I'm hoping that when I'm on book tour, I can do some PowerPoint presentations and show people, because that's, you really get to see a glimpse of her. And in a lot of the pictures in the book, you get to see that sort of, you know, private Millicent, which is amazing. But I wish that I could, you know, include like a second volume that was just, you know, pictures of her.
That is awesome. I love that you were able to find all of that. And I know from reading the book that you met her niece and she gave you a lot of stuff that she had from her Aunt Millicent. Were those pictures things that you got from her?
Some of them, yes.
And do you keep in touch with her?
I do. I've been keeping her posted on every, you know, step of the way with the book. And she's so supportive and she's so sweet.
That's awesome. I bet she's really excited for Millicent to get the recognition that she deserves with this book coming out.
Oh, yeah. She's so stoked about it. It was the most wonderful, heartwarming thing ever.
So you did the audiobook recording yourself. Was that something that you wanted to do as an avid reader, or did the publisher say, no, we really want you to do it and not have a performer narrate it?
It kind of came together on both sides that the book is so personal to me and is written so completely in my voice. There's a lot of bad jokes and swearing and it just is me. So it felt weird to have somebody do it. I did have my Reading Glasses co-host. I do a literary podcast called Reading Glasses. I was actually thinking about asking Bria Grant to do it, but my editor, Peter Joseph at Hanover, was so excited about the prospect of me doing it that I said, all right, let's do this.
That's awesome. I didn't think about that, but that would be, I'm definitely a fan of Reading Glasses. I listen to it every week, and that would be weird to hear Bria doing your voice, I think.
Yeah, that's sort of how it went. I mean, I do not doubt that she would have been incredible, but it is just so personal. And even when Bria read it, she said, Mallory, this is, it's just like you're talking to me.
Yeah, yeah, you had to do it. So what was the process of recording an audiobook like? Every time I listen to one, I think, are they just locked in a box for weeks on end, reading their own book over and over again? Can you give me a little bit of insight as to what that was like?
It was a lot less scary than I thought it was going to be, but it was still pretty intimidating. I went to a studio here in LA, which just ended up being like a giant house. And there was a ton of small, like all the rooms were, had been turned into recording studios, which was just like a little soundproof booth with a comfy chair and an iPad with a little light over it and mic set up. And I just sat in there. Claire, who is this amazing female director who directed me, she was the one who just sort of walked me through it. It took about a week. We recorded for, about 5-6 hours a day. And it was so strenuous. I work from home, so I don't talk as much as I think the average person does. So having to talk, the first day I was like, oh, great, you know, I can do this. I'm so talkative. And then by the second day, I think I went through my weight and throat coat tea by day 3.
That's so interesting. I always wonder, I love listening to audiobooks, thinking like, how does the magic happen? You know, for some people, it's how does a movie get made? For me, it's how does an audiobook get recorded? That's so interesting to hear. So I know you're a huge reader. Was there anything that really surprised you about getting a book published and working with a publishing house?
Yes. Oh my gosh. What's funny is that I'm such a publishing nerd to begin with. I'm so interested in the process of how books get made and how books come out. But what I was so surprised by is that, I mean, every book is so different in the way every book is launched and created is so different. And I'm friends with a lot of other authors and we always are constantly comparing and complaining and supporting each other. And I was just so surprised that there's really no one way to do it. Every editor has a different process. So whenever I would have something happen that was good, from my agent, My agent, Brady McReynolds, who is just the champion of the world, would call me and give me news. And I would just be like, is that good? I don't know what that means. You have no context for anything. And thanks to social media and the internet, everything is evolving so quickly. So you have to sort of develop the secondary set of skills that you never think about. When, you know, you think about being an author, you're like, cool, I wrote a book, it's done. But there's so much more that you have to do, learning to work with an editor and learning how to promote yourself. It really is crazy how much is involved.
So you mentioned a little bit when you were giving a summary of your book that Millicent was pretty much pushed aside, or not pushed aside, hidden by the patriarchy of Hollywood. And with what's going on right now, I think what was most like enlightening, but in a sad way, about your book is that this BS has just been going on forever. And in some of the parts where you described your personal experience with that kind of behavior in Hollywood, it seems to be getting just nastier and nastier. And even in the horror movies of today, every year they get a little bit more extreme, a little bit meaner. What are your thoughts as a woman working in the genre industry on the direction that things like that are going in?
Well, it's so interesting to me that now, and I get wonderful men on the internet who tell me this every day, that because of Me Too, everything is changing. But like, how many women are nominated for Best Director in 2019? Oh, none? Oh, okay. Right. Like, yes, the conversation is definitely there, but I mean, that is my day job. I work as a film producer and I see every day how few women get hired for jobs up and down the line. And it's just amazing to me that people think, oh, well, now that there's a conversation happening, now everything is fine. Right. When in reality, the numbers are crazy, especially in the horror genre. Like, I mean, things are definitely getting marginally better. But until we start getting films made by women of color, made by women, made by gay women, like, there's so much we have to do and so much representation we have to catch up on, especially since the rest of the film world thinks that horror isn't a legitimate film genre.
Right.
That is really, really frustrating. I cannot tell you how many times I've been at a networking event, or God, years ago, I went on a terrible date where guys are like, oh, it's so hard to be a guy in Hollywood right now. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
It's so it's nuts. It's so infuriating.
I think like nowhere is that more seen personally for me this year that people in Hollywood don't think horror is like a legitimate genre, that Toni Collette didn't get nominated for Best Actress for Hereditary. The second I saw that movie, I was like, oh my God, she's going to win. And I couldn't believe that. So
yes, nothing for Sorry to Bother You, nothing for Suspiria, nothing for Hereditary. There was all these incredible horror films that were coming out and they weren't I will go to my grave. You know, when David Lynch got that giant poster of Laura Dern for Inland Empire and like sat outside with a cowbell, like getting mad because Laura Dern didn't get nominated for an Oscar. Like, that's how I feel about Toni Collette.
I agree. I think we should all be out there with our Toni Collette posters.
It's ridiculous.
I totally agree. So do you think that calling out the patriarchy in your book is going to personally affect you at work in your day job?
No.
Okay.
I'm so outspoken, and I'm really lucky. The team that I work with, my boss Sultan Saeed Al-Darmaki, he is so amazing when it comes to stuff like that. He's just fantastic. All the guys I work with are incredible and have always been super, super supportive of me. There's a story in the book that happens there's a couple stories that happen where my boss was there and he took care of it. And I'm so, so lucky because I know that there are so many women out there whose bosses don't support them. And so I've already started getting men. I mean, for months and months since the book got announced, I get hate mail. I get really mean things on Twitter and on Instagram, on Facebook, everywhere it's available to talk to me. I get men yelling at me sometimes in person. But not at work. I have surrounded myself with a great team, and I want all women filmmakers and writers to know that you can do that too. You do not have to put up with all of it. You can totally find men that aren't garbage. They definitely exist.
You might have to dig a little bit more to find them, but that's awesome to hear that they do exist and that you have the support around you, and you're not going to have to worry about that, hopefully, as much. The internet is... you know, the internet, it's always going to happen there no matter what you do. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the actual creature in The Creature from the Black Lagoon, since that is what Millicent designed. So Eric, one of the co-founders of Scariest Things, gave me a couple questions because he's a huge fan. And my favorite one that he asked me was, do you know if Millicent ever like tried the suit on or the head or anything, any part of the creature?
Well, what's funny is I actually do have a really great picture of her with one of the heads from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Abbott and Costello meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which is one of my favorite pictures of her. But because the creature suit was made specifically for Ben Chapman and Rico Browning, she would not have been able to fit.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, Ben Chapman was pretty big. She might have got her head in there. But as far as I know, she unfortunately did not try the suit on.
Not the creature. So you talked a little bit about it in the book. But what were some of the special provisions that had to be made for the suit because it was underwater so much?
Yeah, this was crazy. Creature is one of my favorite Universal monsters. I'm obviously wicked biased because Millicent designed him. I think he's gorgeous. But like you said, Creature was the first and only Universal classic monster that had to be underwater. So they had to design him in a completely different way. He had to be a full suit. They ended up having to put lead plates inside the suit that Riku Browning, who was the guy who played the creature in all the underwater scenes, because the suit was made out of foam latex. Foam latex floats. So it was really, really difficult to get him. It was harder on Riku to be submerged in it because he kept floating back up. So they had to do all these things. The eyes were another big problem. They had to have different versions of the eyes for depending on whether it was close up or not, just because Riku couldn't see through them.
Yeah.
So being underwater added like an entire level of technical difficulties to the suit.
Well, it looks amazing when you see the film, especially when he's swimming underneath Kay and kind of shadowing her. It's just such a gorgeous shot that everything they did really worked out, and it just looks fantastic. So the movie was shot in black and white, but imagery, like after the fact, shows the Gillman is green. Was there any like color considerations to the suit, especially in Millicent's designing, because the movie was filmed in black and white?
Well, Millicent also did all the painting on the suit, and she definitely had to paint it in a way that it would come across on the black and white screen as textured. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that fans see a lot is creature masks with these big red lips. That wasn't just super weird.
Yeah,
but that was not on the original suit. It was not a consideration. They didn't really worry about it.
That's so funny. We can blame that part on Bud Westmore. He put the red lips on the creature.
I blame everything on Bud Westmore.
So what do you hope happens to Patrick's legacy after the release of your book? Do you think she'll be more recognized in the credits of the movie? And I mean, obviously this will help more people know that she was the real designer.
What my hope is that places that feature the creature will give her more credit. Like, for example, if you go to Universal Studios in Studio City here in California, when you get on the tram ride, which is like the famous ride at Universal, mm-hmm. when they're on those like slideshow that they have, they talk about the creature a little bit. They show a picture of Millicent, but do not name her and say nothing about her.
Wow.
So I'm just hoping that pop culture sort of catches up, like especially in the wake of Shape of Water, which was mm-hmm. such an important movie that came out within the past couple of years, you know, and there's not a lot of recognition for her. So I'm hoping at places like that, movie museums, monster movie museums, there's just a little bit more talking about this woman who did it, because there are so many little girls out there that are just waiting to have the same experience that I had of, oh my God, a woman designed this. Maybe I can do it too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. So what got you into horror, the genre in general? Did you grow up reading and watching scary stuff as a young kid, or did it really come to you later? Like you mentioned, in your late teens, the first time you saw The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I definitely got really into it when I was a teenager, but it was always something that really intrigued me. I talk about in the book Chernabog from Disney's Fantasia. It was a mm-hmm. favorite monster. What really kicked it off for me was that my mother had when the movie Creepshow came out, they released a comic book to go along with it, like a mm-hmm. full-length graphic novel of like comics of all of the parts of the anthology. And my mother had that in the bookcase in our living room. And I found that, and it was like being struck by lightning. I had never been scared before. And that kicked off my love of Goosebumps. And that really kicked off my love. It just got me into it. And by the time I was a teenager, I was just so hooked.
That's awesome. It's so funny that you remember that book. I remember one of the first kind of horror books I ever saw in my parents was, everybody was reading that book in the 80s called Coma, that just had this like suspended body on the cover of this mass market paperback that was so creepy. Yeah, it was the creepiest thing I've ever seen. And it was like a medical horror. And I can remember that to this day. So who are some of your favorite horror authors?
Oh, I have so many. Shirley Jackson is my queen. I just live and breathe for Shirley Jackson. I'm also a big fan of Lauren Bucus. She is absolutely incredible to me. I love Caitlin Kiernan. My friend Paul Tremblay, I am crazy about his books. I love his books so, so much. He has a new one coming out this summer called Growing Things. That's absolutely astounding.
Yes, I am very excited for that one.
So I love anything that's a little bit weird. But Shirley Jackson is just my queen.
That's awesome. So to use a term that you and Bria use on Reading Glasses all the time. Okay, Mallory, what's your horror movie wheelhouse, to use a term that you and Bria use on Reading Glasses?
Werewolves is at the tippity top. I actually have to have a separate horror movie pantheon for werewolves, because I will watch any garbage trash movie as long as there's a werewolf in it. I love them so much. I also love exorcism movies, which is super weird because I'm an atheist and I don't believe in God or Satan, but they still scare me anyway. I love witch movies because I love badass ladies doing things. And haunted house movies. I love a haunted house because a haunted house story means you're going to get some kind of crazy backstory or a legend. And I am so here for that. So any of those four are my favorite kinds of horror movies.
That's awesome. Do you love the classic monster movies and Universal monster movies, or was Creature from the Black Lagoon really the one that jumped out for you?
You know, it's super funny because I am now like becoming the creature lady.
Yeah.
But my heart truly belongs to the Wolfman. I love the Universal monster movies. I love all of them. I love my partner, Alan, always laughs at me because when he goes out of town, he goes back and our Amazon Prime watch list is just all old monster movies. I don't know why. I love the cheesier, the better, even though I mean the Universal ones are really good and wonderful, but I just love black and white monster movies. There's something about them and I will watch them for days.
That's awesome. Are there any upcoming 2019 horror books and movies that you're looking forward to?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, first off, Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Oh yeah.
So stoked for that. Like I said earlier, Paul Tremblay's Growing Things. It's a short story collection. It is terrifying. I am so excited for it. That is like my number one horror release that I'm stoked about. I know that there's another horror movie coming out. Oh my God. This Is Us. That's the other.
The preview looks so scary, but I watched it once and I don't want to see it again because I don't want to know anything else.
Yeah, I am so excited about it. And my friend Chelsea Peters' movie, Satanic Panic, is coming out this year.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited about. I cannot wait. The script was written by Grady Hendrix, who I'm a big fan of. So it's just like so much wins. I think this is going to be a really good year for horror.
I hope so. I think so. I think for the past couple years, it's really been like, you know, you read all these articles, the golden age of horror again. And, you know, it seems to be coming through. There's more good stuff than there is bad stuff. And like any genre, and especially with all the streaming platforms, there's a lot of bad stuff out there. But
yes,
there seems to be some really good quality stuff coming up. And it's super excited for all of us fans to have all this content all the time.
Yes, it is a very good time to be a horror fan.
Yes, it is. Well, Mallory, where can our listeners find you online?
I'm on Twitter way too much at Mallory O'Mara. You can go there for cat pictures and really bad jokes. And I'm also on Twitter, on Instagram at Mallory O'Mara. I'm at Mallory O'Mara on basically everything. If you're looking for more information about the book or you want to pre-order it or the audiobook, just go to my website, MalloryO'Mara.com. My constantly evolving tour dates are also on there, along with links to Reading Glasses, which you can subscribe to on iTunes. And there's going to be some information about the movie I have coming out next month. So if you are interested at all in anything that I was talking about, MalloryO'Mara.com is the place to go.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mallory. I really appreciate you talking with me tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.